that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Man City Show. It's Nigel Rothman back in the chair. City lose at home for the first time since March when they lost to Tottenham Hotspur. I think that's the first time in 20 matches. Credit to Brentford, who came with a plan and executed it well, it's fair to say. Lots of City players had off days. The others were probably focusing on their fitting session for their brand new Marks & Spencer suit. Arsenal march on. We're now 5 points behind them. Midweek, City beat Chelsea to get into the fourth round of the Carabao Cup. And we look forward to the next 6 weeks, a festival of football, celebrating Erling Haaland's future at Ashton United in the seventh tier of English football. Listen, let's get started. I've got three guests to help me this week, as always. Welcome back to Rob Barron, CTID. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Nigel. Good to see you.
Spencer Debson. Hi, Spencer.
Evening, Nigel.
And hi also to Edward Timpson. Hi, Edward.
Hello again, Nigel.
Listen, Brentford had a plan, didn't they? Press City, play it long, and chuck in a bit of time wasting along the way. And that's kind of, it worked, didn't it, Edward?
Sadly, it did. And unfortunately, we've seen this before, not just from Brentford, but I think Villa earlier in the season, which was a nil-all draw. Leicester have been quite good at it over the years. And it seems to be our Achilles heel. A team that come well organised, to be fair, to Thomas Frank. He's been there now, I think, four years or so, and he's got it sort of finely tuned. And earlier in the season, they had a 4-0 win against Stretford. They had a nil-all draw against Chelsea, but they've also lost badly to Newcastle and to Arsenal, unfortunately. So you never quite know what they're going to bring to the game, but on this occasion, they couldn't have done it any better. And unfortunately, some of the changes we made to our defence didn't work. I thought Akanji, for the first time, had a bit of a reality check in a City shirt, losing quite a few flick-ons and second headers. Cancelo had a fairly poor game. Haaland, I wasn't 100% sure he was at his peak of fitness, although his run in the 99th minute to try and stop the winning goal was pretty ferocious. But I do worry that maybe we're getting a bit predictable. The break could do us some good. It was a bit slow and it wasn't really dynamic and creative in the way that we would expect. And at the heart of that is Kevin De Bruyne, and they shackled him so well. And to be fair, he was limited in what he could do to influence the game. And you could say we were quite lucky to only come out one goal behind, which at home at the Etihad is really unheard of. So very, very disappointing, particularly going into a six-week break. And it has been a reality check, but perhaps when it's not going to be plain sailing all season like we thought it was going to be.
That's great. Thanks, Edward. Rob, Edward's obviously covered quite a bit there. What's your take on Brentford, their tactics, and how well they did at the Etihad?
Well, I did suspect that something was going to go wrong when Tony wasn't selected to go to the World Cup. And I thought, if he's got anything in him, he'll have a good game. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I agree with all of Edward's analysis. The defence was really ropey on Saturday, and the whole team took a long time to warm up. You know, the first 5 minutes, they were dreadful. And players that we rely on, like De Bruyne, for example, simply weren't there at the races. And it showed. I mean, two comments I want to make. One is, if Gundogan had scored the open goal, then we would have had a very different take on it. So it shows how narrow the margins are. And secondly, while I'm cross with Pep for not using substitutes, Grealish should have played on Saturday at some point, in my view. But I do admire Pep for his absolute searing honesty about what happened. Can you imagine Jurgen Klopp saying the other team were a better team and then giving an analysis showing why they were the better team? And I think it just shows what high standards we're used to, and we just have to write it off and move on.
What would you like to add, Spencer?
I was going to say, you don't need me tonight, Nigel, after that brilliant analysis by my fellow panel.
Okay, question two then. Let's move on to another question. No, go on, Spencer. Give us your view.
No, the only thing I would add to that is it's quite ironic that we're making those comments in the context of a game where we had 75% possession and 29 shots. And I suppose, you know, we're used to routine wins. We'd had this down as a banker, hadn't we? But I think when we lose a game like this, we ask ourselves, you know, is it us or was it them? Inevitably, it's a bit of both. But actually, Brentford were brilliant on the day. Two deep sitting banks of five. Ben Mee at the back for them was brilliant for them. He's one that could also have been going to Qatar, really. Tomi put the proverbial football sort of two fingers up, and that wasn't, you know, he looked fantastic. And as you know, as we've said before, they on the break, absolutely devastating on the break, Silva, Mbeumo, Tomi, and we could have given away a third goal at the end. So I think the conclusion for me was a really disappointing performance overall, but against a team that were really well set up on the day. And on reflection, I'm not sort of wholly disheartened, but it's very disappointing for that to be the closing game before we all stop for 6 weeks for the World Cup.
Can I just pick up on one or two of the individual performances? Because, I mean, Cancelo, I think, was somebody who's already been mentioned, but did stand out to me as having a particularly poor game. One or two have said it's not his first and he's on a bit of a decline, which maybe is a bit unkind. But how did you see that, Rob? I mean, Cancelo, would he be one player you'd pick out as being a particularly poor performer? He certainly did to me.
Yeah, I mean, he has had a number of bad games. Incidentally, I thought Chelsea could have scored three or four goals on Wednesday.
We'll come on to that.
Yeah, so it wasn't a surprise that we got stuffed. But for me, the most disappointing person on the pitch was De Bruyne, and it shows how much we rely on his genius. When he becomes an ordinary mortal, then you can see that very clearly. And I think that was the case. I don't think either Gundogan or Silva played particularly well. They both looked tired and lacking in ideas. And, you know, I think we could have relied a bit more on Alvarez, given the nature of the number of goals he scored. So, yeah. Can't just blame Cancelo. There are others with him.
Spencer, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was only going to say that Haaland, of course, the charge has been, if there's any criticism to be said, and it's very sparing, that our tactics become more obvious when he's where he is. He had two or three on him at all times. But in those sorts of games where we weren't getting joy reaching him, you'd want to use the space, and he created space constantly. I think Gundogan said it himself after the match that, you know, they tried to get into the space that he may have created, but the Brentford defence was very, very good and held tight on the day. But Haaland really was very peripheral in the game overall, and multiple times just wasn't reached by the providers.
And Edward, I've written those three down: KDB, Cancelo, and Haaland were kind of the three that stood out for me. Do you want to comment on them or add another one into the mix?
Well, I did touch before on a Kanji who has been not just short of a revelation, really, considering he came from nowhere and has been a mainstay over the last few months and very reliable. But I just thought this was the first time that he was tested, and there's elements of him maybe where we've seen some weaknesses that haven't been on display so far. And that just takes me back to this rotation of the defence, and particularly the centre-backs. I mean, Diaz, player of the season last season, I don't know whether he's got a niggle or anything like that, but why is he not playing more games? Why wasn't he brought on when it was clear that Kanji was struggling against Tony on those flick-ons? Why doesn't he bring Diaz on, who's, you know, bigger, more solid header of the ball and more physical? I think that would have been a change I would have liked to have seen. And going back to the possession point and the shots, we had 29 shots, as we said before, but we only had 6 on target. And I think Brentford had 10 shots and 8 on targets. So they're far more clinical than we were. It was also symptomatic of the sorts of efforts and chances that they had. They were much more clear cut. So it felt to me that the whole team had an off day. But when the engine isn't working in the middle, and when you've got a defence which is quite brittle, even with Ederson, who actually played pretty well and made some decent saves right on his goal line, there was a sense of a lack of cohesiveness that we normally associate with when we're playing fluid football. So it never really clicked. And the fact that Haaland didn't have a single shot on goal is symptomatic of that fact. So I don't think it's back to the drawing board by any stretch of the imagination, but I just think we maybe some more consistency at the back in the personnel would help us just play game to game more solidly rather than some of the leaky goals that we're giving away.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Whistleblowers Daily is a bite-sized podcast that goes out every weekday of the football season. Join Mark Smith and a rotation of guests as they give you all the headlines, plus some concise opinion on each, arming you with all the up-to-date football knowledge you need to get through your day. Whether it's bringing you reaction to the big games, fallout from the latest VAR scandal, or just someone to keep a tally of all Erling Haaland's hat-tricks, Whistleblowers Daily is the show to sort you out. Whistleblowers Daily, available every weekday of the football season. Search for The Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Can I just add a slightly different thing into the mix, which I haven't warned you about, so I'm going to kind of put you on the spot slightly, so forgive me for that. But something that I noticed and is increasingly coming into the game, which is not a surprise, teams coming to the Etihad and time wasting, particularly goalkeepers, who have now got it down to a fine art. Literally, the goalkeeper at the weekend literally waited for the referee to turn his back before he kind of moved, and would just literally stand still as soon as the referee kind of moved to the centre circle, waiting for the ball to drop, whatever it is. And right the way through, there was a situation in the second half where a ball went out of play, it went to the ball boy, the ball boy went to throw it to the Brentford player, and he kind of deliberately missed it and walked on to pick a ball up that was on a cone sort of 10 yards away. And it really is starting to get me down. There has been the suggestion that as soon as the ball is out of play, a clock stops. And instead of playing 45 minutes, we play 30 minutes. But we play 30 minutes of the ball being in play. Some analysis was done a few seasons ago where the maximum ball in play was something like 55 minutes. So actually, by doing that, with two halves of 30 minutes, we'll actually probably get another 10 minutes of football being played. So I just want to kind of put that to you as a thought. It happens in other sports. There's no question of how much time is being added on. The ball goes out of play. The clock stops. There's no tactic about time wasting. It just goes out of the game immediately. It's not to your advantage to do that. So I just thought I'd just throw that out there and just see if, A, you've given that any thought, whether you think that's a good idea or it just would ruin the game. So Edward, your thoughts on that as a suggestion? It has been suggested this week because I'm noticing it more and more, particularly when teams come to the Etihad. Do you have a view on that?
Well, first of all, Nigel, I very much share your frustration. And it's not as if time wasting hasn't been in football since time immemorial. We've seen it for decades upon decades. But it's becoming, in a sense, more professional. And as I'd like to think a reasonable aficionado of the game, it takes away a lot of the enjoyment. And it gives a sense of what the mentality is of of some of the tactical play now coming into the game. So I think there is a case for it. The purist of me likes to think we can still have 45 minutes per half of football and have a good, great game of football. But we are now seeing more and more different ways of trying to eke out a little bit more time out of the game. And as you say, very many other professional sports, rugby, hockey, one of, you know, others who could be named, they have a different approach. So I think I did read that whether it's FIFA or UEFA or somewhere in the world, they are trying to pilot this approach of 30 minutes each half, stopping the clock when the ball's out of play. And of course, the other advantage would be that we all know when the game's about to end, like we do in rugby, that fateful game at the weekend when the England World Cup semi-final. They in the rugby league, I think they ran out of time, but you knew that the clock was up. And also in the women's final, similarly. So I think it adds another dimension to the game. But I think we'd need to trial it properly to understand what the unintended consequences might be of changing the way that we approach the timing of a game of football, because it could lead to other types of behaviour, which could sort of take away from the joint of the game. But I certainly think we've reached a point now we need to look at it seriously and work out how we combat it, because otherwise we're going to see it happen more and more. Just finally, one thing that could be done, which FIFA have done at World Cups before, is just say to referees, massively clamp down on this.
Yeah. I remember, whether it feels like 10 seasons ago, maybe probably much longer than that, where there was a season where they did that. They said, we are going to clamp down. Anybody who, I mean, it's in the laws. If you delay the restart of play, you get cautioned. It's in the laws, like throw-ins and corners and free kicks. It's part of the laws. And you increasingly players will stand in front and referees allow them to do it and sort of push them back. And for that one season, anybody who stood in front of the ball, yellow card immediately. And it did seem to speed things up. Rob, you must have a view, I'm sure.
I do. I think it's interesting because when I was a boy, there were no ball boys at the game. There was only one ball, and players used to have to go and get the ball from wherever it went. And that meant that far more time was lost than happens nowadays. So we should remember that. The second thing we should remember is that, I mean, I think this has been going on for years, from about the third minute that teams waste time when they're playing City. But we need a moral equivalence here. When City get a late winning goal, then they waste time, which we consider to be legitimate for all the time wasted by the other team. So we need to be careful. But I'm a bit surprised at you, because I think this is about referees. It's about referees exercising their personal authority. And if they don't do it, who else is going to do it? So I think they have a responsibility, and that they should be instructed by those who advise them that this is necessary for the integrity of the game.
I'm violently agreeing with you, Rob. That's exactly my point, that those 15, 20 seasons ago, whenever it was, when that happened, it speeded it up. And the other thing that, when you were talking about no ball boys all those years ago, obviously Edward and Spencer won't remember this, they're far too young, but also players got 10 yards at a free kick. There wasn't this standing 5 yards, knowing exactly, and the referee has to mark it out and pace it out and push them back. They just got 10 yards pretty much every time. So things are changing. Spencer, I'm sounding like an old git here. I realise that. Help me out here. What's your view, my friend?
No, speaking as your younger colleague on this, of course, I'm remembering the great Ronaldo when he went to the ball boy, and the ball boy looked the other way and sort of threw the ball away. And that's a bit good. Is that in reverse, isn't it? I mean, I'm kind of against this in terms of it's the game. There's various different types of time wasting. And I think that the point that Rob made, you know, it's about the refereeing. I mean, in some sense, of course, it would be more accurate. But then I think we'd also get into petty arguments about when when the timer started and stopped, and when it really went out and didn't go out, and peripheral things like that. So I do agree. I think it's on the referees really and the powers that be to see that enforced and applied consistently. But you know, we search for purism all the time, I suppose.
Before we move on, just one other thought about the weekend, a stat that sort of sort of whetted my appetite, and I'm sure you'll all enjoy this. You may well have seen it. In the four games that we've dropped points, Jack Grealish hasn't started in any of them. Rob Behrens, I know you would have seen that. I'm just going to start with you on this one.
Yeah, I mean, he should have played. I mean, it's, you know, Pep is a magnificent coach who we cannot criticise very much. But really, on Saturday, the team was crying out for some change, some creativity. And it was, in my view, especially after the good game he'd had on Wednesday, when he played really exceptionally well, it was set up for Grealish to come on and maybe Phillips as well. And it just didn't happen. And I think that's disappointing of Pep. What was he waiting for December, the end of December? It was an error, in my view.
Spencer, an error. Jack Grealish, player of the season.
Oh, was that a statement or a question?
Yes, both.
Had a great game. I thought it was a great game against Chelsea, actually, for the Independent. I mean, it was could have definitely gone either way. Ortega had a fantastic game, didn't he? He looked like if Edison had that sort of shot stopping abilities, then that would be absolutely our perfect keeper. Grealish had a great game. I thought Alvarez had a great game as well, and definitely wanted to see more of them against Brentford. Why Pep doesn't do that and holds? I think that in another moment, and if we'd got into our stride, then a game like Brentford we could and should have won. We've done it very many times before. In fact, I think three or four times this season we've come from behind, haven't we, to equalise and then go on to win it. So I suppose that was a sort of keep the faith type mentality. And then when it doesn't happen, we reflect on it in certain ways. But yeah, I remain a Grealish fan. He's got a lot more to give. I hope he has a good World Cup, and I hope he gets pitch time in the World Cup to come back and have a great second half of the season.
I want to talk about the Chelsea game in a bit more detail. Just before we move away from the stat on Grealish and just sticking with the Premier League for now, Edward, can we just talk about Arsenal briefly as well? And I always refer to Leicester City. Was it 2015-16 where everybody at this point was saying, oh, they'll get a couple of injuries and their squad's a bit thin and City will come good or whoever else? And of course, they just kept going and kept going. We're now 5 points behind. Arsenal looking very strong, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And at the weekend, they didn't play their best game against Wolves, although they're Wolves are bottom of the league. They still a difficult team, particularly Molyneux. But they still came away with 3 points. And the bandwagon for them rolls on. They haven't had any significant injuries so far. And not that we want to wish that on any of their players, particularly some of the ex-City players. But that's something they will have to contend with because they don't have the depth in the squad that City have and one of the other teams up at the top. But of course, we've got Newcastle not far behind and they seem to be on a similar run, beating Chelsea 1-0. And they're only, I think, 2 points behind us, albeit I think we've got a game in hand. So I think Arsenal, they prove that they have got more than just a string of three or four wins together. They've only lost one all season, same as Newcastle. So we've still got to play them twice, of course. And in seasons gone by, when it's been us and Liverpool, they've been the big games, the ones that we've looked forward to try and rein them back in the way that Arsenal currently are 5 points ahead. So I'm a little bit more worried than I was maybe three or four weeks ago. That's maybe not unusual in the circumstances. It may be that the World Cup breaks come at the right time for us rather than them. And we'll see what happens when we come back. But I think Pep will be thinking very hard and very tactically about how he's going to approach the so-called second half of the season, as it will be, to see how we deal with the Arsenal games themselves, but also these types of Brentford games where, over the Pep years, they've been the ones that, for some reason, by the odd goal, often at home, have just made us come up short in games that we should be winning. So unless Arsenal start drawing, which they're not doing, and come a cropper with some of their squad, I can't see them falling too far off the level that they've reached to date. And it's going to be tricky. So we're going to have to throw everything at it.
And Rob Arteta has learnt from the master, of course. And what a season he's having.
And again, Pep has been so generous towards him, saying that he was a strong character before he became the assistant manager at City, which is a very gracious thing to say. Of course, Arsenal might buy over the transfer window if they feel that they need extra cover. And the thing about Newcastle is they have no European commitments. So it's going to be a really exciting second half of the season where four clubs at least could win the Premier League this year. And, you know, fortunately, we've got big games to play against Arsenal, Spurs and Chelsea, who I don't think Chelsea are going to win it. But, you know, everything to play for. And that's what Pep wanted going into the World Cup. The idea that we would be top of our Champions League group and still in touching distance of the Premier League. So it's going to be about character as well as about whether you keep your players injury free.
Spencer, a quick mention on Arsenal, then I want to just explore a little bit some of the performances around the Carabao Cup tie against Chelsea. So your thoughts on Arsenal first, Spencer, and then and carry on with your further thoughts on Chelsea City in the League Cup.
Yeah, on Arsenal, I was a little bit concerned a few weeks ago, to Edward's point, and now I'm very concerned. I mean, it does have shades of the Leicester season, doesn't it, where we were all in denial up to and beyond Christmas. And I think Leicester beat City at the Etihad, and I thought, oh my goodness, this could really go all the way. I feel the same about Arsenal, actually, albeit 14 games gone, 24 to go. So clearly there's an awful lot to play for. Injuries will play a part. But in terms of mentality, you don't see Arsenal failing on mentality with Arteta there. They've got a great young team. Sometimes youth is joyful and is expressive, and you don't get the sort of nerves. The other side of that is that City are full of experienced title winners, and that can also count as we come to the business end of the season. So I think it will be there. It's the Premier League is the greatest league on earth, isn't it? And I'm sure Arsenal, City, Newcastle, Spurs, maybe Chelsea, maybe United. It'll be. I think it'll be a run to the end. I do notice that we are away at Brentford on the final day of the season. But let's move on to the Chelsea thing, shall we?
I wrote down Grealish and Ortega. I mean, just two phenomenal performances. And what a keeper Ortega looks. What a deputy. I mean, for the first time, we've got someone who's really, really challenging Ederson for that crown, isn't he?
Yeah, I wonder if he is. When we've seen him, he really has looked fantastic, hasn't he? And as a shot stopper, I haven't seen a better performance by a City keeper in memory, because it really was a humdinger of a game for the Independent.
You never saw Keith McRae play though, did you, Spencer? I think that's the thing.
Might have been just a little bit before my time.
Exactly.
Might have been.
Yeah,
did he predate Joe Corrigan?
He did. Yeah,
that's my big Joe was my man.
Came from Motherwell, £100,000 from Motherwell, redhead.
Okay,
and fine keeper.
And he had the shot stopping ability.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't at all.
I'm now thinking about Alex Williams as well, because he was a big lad as well.
He was.
So yeah, I mean, enjoyable game in that sense. I mean, both Chelsea and City had strong teams out, and it could have been very different on another day. Grealish played really well. Alvarez, I think it was his fifth start. I personally would love to see Alvarez getting a really strong, consistent run of games, because I think he's getting better and better. I think he'll be really, really important to us in the second half of the season. But Mahrez also played well. I mean, I really did like the flow of the second goal, because that was a most beautiful crossfield pass, wasn't it, from Alvarez initially. I think Mahrez picks a ball out of the sky like no other player that I've seen play, and I include, I think, Messi and Ronaldo in that. He just has this wonderful ability to trap the ball and in flow, and you know, the keeper parried it, and Alvarez scored. So did we deserve to win that game? Just about, I'd say, on reflection. And we'll now go into the next round. And I think we'll put a strong team out now because we're going to be at the business end of our Carabao Cup.
Edward, any other thoughts on the Chelsea game? Any other reflections?
Well, I think the players that we mentioned were clearly the standout performers. I mean, Alvarez, I have a huge amount of time for, and I agree with Spencer. I mean, I know it's hard with Haaland being the dominant force up front, but I think we've seen enough of Alvarez to know that he is his huge capability, but also is a sort of Aguero-esque eye for goal. We've seen now in various guises, different, you know, the angles that he finds the goal from, the power in which he shoots, considering sort of his age and he's still growing and developing. I think he's a potentially huge star for us, but he does need to get some more game time throughout the season. And probably if we stay in the cup competitions, it gives him a chance to do that. I thought Rico Lewis, who is previously had obviously was man of the match in the Champions League game, although he wasn't as prominent in this game, I still thought he had a really solid game. And we've really missed Walker at right back, particularly actually I think against Brentford. Stones didn't have a great game either at the weekend. So he's one that we need to nurture and see grow. And I can see him being in the first team squad now for a number of years and pushing through. I think we were actually quite lucky to win. I mean, Chelsea had some big chances. On another day, they could have, Mount and one or two others could have put three or four in the net. And fortunately, Ortega was on absolute fire. And he's the opposite of Bravo, who, whenever he got the ball, I was a nervous wreck. Because Ortega, at the moment, I haven't had a moment where I felt that he's going to do a complete banana skin. So it's good to have him as backup, and I think he will probably play throughout the competition as long as we're in it, and that's great news.
Final words, Rob, from you on the Chelsea game. Obviously, we played Liverpool on Thursday, the 22nd of December, first game back, actually, after the World Cup.
Yeah, how ridiculous is that? But it was a joy to see Lewis and Gomez playing in the defence. I love watching Cole Palmer. He didn't have a particularly excellent game, but he needs game time, and he's really a great asset. And to see Calvin Phillips come on and to perform so competently after such a long time out, that's really encouraging. But the only one thing I'd like to ask colleagues about is that I thought that Grealish played such a good game and he wasn't playing from the wing. And I wonder whether those two things are related. He seems stilted when he plays on the wing, and he's giving the ball to colleagues all the time, whether by instruction or what, I don't know. But he played with more freedom on Wednesday, and I think that was to our advantage.
Would you agree with that, Spencer, as Bob suggested?
Yeah. Very much so. I mean, we don't know, do we? But you feel that he's playing to order during these league games. And because we play, you know, the ultimate possession game, the instruction is, you know, 8 times out of 10, don't take the chance, don't take the player on, only when you think you've got constructive play. So I think we're giving Grealish the benefit of the doubt there. But he's got the skill set. I mean, nothing hugely changed in that performance other than he really did take the man on. He's got that great ability to find the space. And he really deserved a goal, didn't he? He had three really excellent chances and the keeper saved. But I think he just needs to just show more of that flair. And he's hopefully will start to do that more and more.
Edward, do you want to add anything at all? Do you want to answer Rob's question?
I think last time I was on, I was suggesting maybe we just mix it up a bit with Grealish and maybe 10 minutes during the game, swap him over onto the right, maybe playing slightly inside, run at some defenders. And he's certainly, he's more, when he's more direct, and he quite likes the 1-2 quick pass where he runs on from it, and he's got more capacity to do that when he's more further inside the field. and closer to whether it's the front line or potentially De Bruyne or whoever's playing in that role, Foden. So I would like to see him have more opportunity in the melee, closer to defenders rather than stuck out on the wing, and just mix him around a bit because he's a utility player and he will frighten defenders wherever he is. Whereas if it's too predictable where he is and him just playing the ball back to Gomez or whoever's playing left back, then that sort of takes away some of the uniqueness and the possibilities that Grealish gives to the team. So I think there's definitely more from him, and the fact that he's growing in confidence suggests it's time to maybe just release him into that area of the pitch. Maybe not for a whole game, but just now and again, and see what happens, because I think that could really bring great rewards for him.
All right. With the time we've got available, Rob, you can kick us off. Let's talk about the Festival of Football, the next 6 weeks. How do you think Erling Haaland will do at Ashton United then in the next 6 weeks? What are you looking forward to, particularly with his time there on loan, as they've obviously put this bid in, which is likely to be accepted, I suspect?
I mean, it's so disappointing to want to be excited about the World Cup and to have to go to such a dreadful place as Qatar to hold it, where basic human rights are neglected and traduced. And I think that is really depressing for the world that needs something to celebrate and cheer about. And so I'm looking forward to it with skepticism, and I hope that I'm proved wrong. But at the moment, I don't see it's going to be the spectacle it should be.
I was trying to avoid even mentioning the World Cup. I was genuinely interested in your thoughts on the news that Haaland, that Ashton United put in a cheeky bid for Haaland. So that was my question. But thank you for sharing your thoughts on the WC words, which I wasn't even going to use. But I appreciate your honesty and your forthright comments, of which I don't disagree with any of them. So, Spencer, your thoughts on this cheeky bid from Ashton United then? Bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, what we need, isn't it? It's a fantastic entry for a bit of fish and chip paper, isn't it? It's a lovely evening news filler. And I thought it was kind of much more fun and engaging than the cat that got stuck in the tree. But I think that's probably the shorter and long of it. I do wonder what do the Haalands and the Mahrezes sort of do for the next 4 to 6 weeks, actually. Presumably there's a whole maintenance thing going on at City in the background. But how do they spend their time and keep their sort of, you know, the motivation?
Let us know what you think. We're at City Podcast, of course. I've got my own thoughts. I guess a combination of some time on a beach, I'm sure, relaxing, but I guess keeping themselves fit and well hydrated and the right sort of diet, I'm sure, is all part of it. I'm sure they'll have plenty of people keeping an eye on them to make sure they come back firing on all cylinders. Edward, the last words are with you. I'll leave it to you what you comment on. It's up to you whether you don't have to talk about the World Cup, and I'd understand if you don't want to. You may want to talk about the fish and chip paper story about Haaland, which I thought was wonderful.
Exactly the injection of humour and lightheartedness we need in football from time to time, because we all take it far too seriously. Issues like Qatar we do need to take seriously, to be fair to Rob. I know there's at least 15 City squad players going, so the one thing I will say is I wish them all well and hope they come back in one piece, invigorated for the rest of the season. I don't know what the average gate is at Ashton United. I think when Haaland goes there, it might just tick up a notch. Although I suspect the allure of his large villa in Spain will be a more likely destination for him over the next 6 weeks, albeit a very stringent fitness regime will be put in place. It does remind me of going back quite a few years when Notts County announced that Sven-Goran Eriksson was going to be their manager, and that Sol Campbell was going to play for them, Kasper Schmeichel was going to play for them, and we thought it was a joke, and then it all happened. And of course, then all fell apart very quickly, and they realised the guy who so-called bought the club was a fraudster and didn't actually have the money. I don't think Ashton United are trying to pull that trick off. I think they're just trying to have a bit of fun. And, you know, why not?
Well done, Ashton United, and well done to my three guests. Huge thanks to Rob Barron, CTID, to Edward Timpson, and to Spencer Debson. This is Nigel Rothband saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.com. sportsocialpodcast.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.